Hello, everybody. My name is Dave Wilson, and if you can hear the sound of my voice and all this stuff works, we're about to embark upon an adventure together called Dave Wilson's version of Radio Liberty. This afternoon, Dr. Stanley Monteith is away from the microphone once again. Keep him in your prayers for provision and protection, doing what he has to do at this point in time. And he's asked me to sit in here for a while, and I'm absolutely thrilled to be able to do this for you, and hopefully we'll have programming that will not only cause you to think, that will also bring you just a little bit of enjoyment and pass your time of day wherever you may be in your car or listening at home in a way that honors the Lord. You know, the things that are said on this program are not necessarily the views of the station that you're listening to, nor are they the views of the sponsors that you may hear on that station. They're my views, the views of our guests. And if anybody wants to worry or talk about the views, or I guess we'll be opening the phone lines up later here locally in the Santa Cruz area, 464-8295, but anywhere across the vast audio radiance, as they used to say, 888-24-LIBERTY. That's 888-245-4237. My guest this afternoon is Mr. Tom DeWeese. He is the author of the DeWeese Report, and that's published by the American Policy Center. We're going to be talking about property values today. Property values, what has that got to do with anything in a Christian radio program, a program that's interested in what's going on in these United States? Tom wrote, "I am here today because I am an American and I want my country." Well, Tom, I agree with you. What's happening anyway?
Well, there's lots of things happening. We've got assaults on private property and assaults on our national sovereignty taking place, and you know, what's really sad about all that is that the United States is the most unique nation on earth, because we're the only nation that was designed from the beginning to protect rights we're born with, that God gave us, and all the other nations on earth are designed to tell you what your rights will be. And now, as we're losing our, you know, our private property rights, and we're losing our national sovereignty, we're going to fall into that global village, we fear, where a different kind of government will dictate our lives.
There are any number of fronts that can be taken by the listeners of this program on this battle, as there are many fronts being taken up by the people who want to see our national sovereignty disappear for whatever reason. And Tom, today I hope during the program somehow we can figure out a little bit about what's the motivation behind all of this stuff. And towards the end, we'll try to empower our listeners as to what they can actually do. Sometimes people say, well, I can't do anything. The government has got all the money. They've got all the deep pockets for lawyers and so forth. But I think that your American Policy Center, the newsletter that you put out, people like you, James Corsi, or Jerome Corsi, rather, other people, they all are fighting in this battle, and there are ways that we, the so-called normal citizens of the world, can help. And I want to remind people that property rights, that which we're going to talk about today, come to us from the Decalogue, the Ten Commandments. One of them says, "Thou shalt not steal." It's a very important concept to understand, that right there at the beginning of our time and in our understanding and the revelation of God, he said to us that one of the most important things was that we should honor other people's property. And we're going to be talking about this with Tom DeWeese today. Tom, I'm assuming that they can still get a free copy of the DeWeese Report if they were to write in or call, and we'll give that number a little bit later. We're going to be joined by our Pacific Coast listeners here in just a second, and at that time we'll continue along with our introductory comments. I want to thank all of those who are listening on the Genesis and on the World Wide Web. We'll be right back. Hello, everybody. My name is Dave Wilson, and I'd like to welcome our Monterey Bay listeners to the special edition of Radio Liberty this afternoon. It's my very great pleasure to have Tom DeWeese with me, and I'm hoping that we'll be able to get some great understanding going here along with your calls as you choose to join us in our conversation about property rights and what actually is going on with property rights. Goodness gracious, it seems that everybody is out to get a piece of that which I've worked so hard for, whether it's in property taxes or encroachment on my use of my private property through the planning commission or the place that gives permits for things, all sorts of things like that we're going to be talking about. And you can join us later when we open up the phones at 464-8295 here in the local Monterey Bay area, or 888-24-LIBERTY, wherever you may be listening outside the 831 area code. That's 888-245-4237. Tom DeWeese puts out something called the DeWeese Report. He's been on the air here with me several times, and Dr. Stan as well. He's out there on the East Coast. And Warrenton, Virginia is the home that our guest, Tom, is. How are you doing this afternoon, Tom?
I'm doing well.
Well, I appreciate your spending some time with us, and it's important to me that we do get out this information that we're going to be trying to get out today. The idea of property rights coming from the Bible is true, but the idea of property rights as far as the UN is concerned is something else. Their idea is that rights are granted and rescinded by men. What say you about that?
Well, you know, there are two major documents in the world today that define man's freedoms or man's destiny. One is the Declaration of Independence, which basically outlines that man's rights are God-given. He's born with them, and it's government's job to protect those rights no matter what. And Constitution was written to outline how that would be done.
Uh-huh.
The second document is the UN's Declaration on Human Rights, which is written very much like the Declaration of Independence and is used as the standard which all of us are to follow. But what happens with the UN's Declaration of Human Rights is that it very carefully defines what our rights will be, and the second to the last section of that document says that everything that's defined in the Declaration of Human Rights is outlined in accordance with rules of the United Nations.
We're just beginning to discuss the role of the United Nations in property rights here in these United States. Our guest is Tom DeWeese, author of the DeWeese Report, and he puts together that under the auspices of the American Policy Center. So, Tom, as you were saying, the UN really doesn't have the same kind of idea about where property rights come from, I'm sure, and they would like to empower themselves to regulate this a lot more than it's already done, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, just a year ago, I was at Cambridge University in England. Before the Cambridge Union, I debated the United Nations before a British Member of Parliament, a former UK ambassador to the UN, and a leader of one of the major programs at the United Nations. And what I had to say that day was that every single idea, project, program, treaty of the United Nations is based on the idea of redistribution of the wealth, taking from this guy, given to that guy. And what I tried to point out was that you take it from the first guy and give it to the second guy. Tomorrow the second guy needs it again, and the first guy has to cough it up again. Eventually, this causes an erosion of where the first guy ends up needing to have someone hand him a handout because he's now poor. And the second guy who started receiving all this, he has to live every day.
So we're not talking about wealth. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but you used the word wealth, and sometimes that gives people ideas, well, that's not me because I'm not wealthy. But that's not really the case, is it?
Wealth is anything that you have. There are varying degrees of wealth. You know, I'd like to be a Bill Gates kind of wealth.
Uh-huh.
But, most people's wealth is the income that they have, the money that they have saved, the value of their property, and of their goods that they own. That's their wealth. And we collect this throughout life at varying degrees, but that is ours. That's personally ours.
So if somebody wants to come along and redistribute it, that somehow is they're going to take it away from you and give it to somebody, and you don't really have a say in whom they're giving it to. if even you wanted to do it. And more than likely, they're trying to write the laws so that you don't have anything to say about the fact that you're going to have to do this, right?
Yeah. Taxes is one form of redistribution of the wealth. We take it from those who earn, and we give it in varying programs to a long list of things. Some we may be happy about, some we're not. Mm-hmm. But once taken from us and put into the hands of government, we don't have much of a say in where what happens to it, and B, once it is put into that bureaucracy which collects it, there are a whole lot of hands out there who palms that you're crossing with that money. There's a lot of waste if there's a lot of money involved in government, and in the end, does it or does it not trickle down to the person it was intended to in the first place? And this is what we find around the world. We've got horrible poverty around the world, and all kinds of programs. There are probably thousands of programs to try to eradicate poverty, and yet poverty continues to grow, and you have to analyze why is that.
People today in the United States, anyway, are living within a mechanism which allows them to get a job, earn some money, purchase things, and get a deed or title for some things. Otherwise, you just have things, you know what I'm saying. Now, that deed or that title is a reflection of the system that we've agreed to live by being American citizens. Isn't that right?
It is. There's a very important book written by a gentleman by the name of Hernando de Soto. He is an economist from Peru, and he has become literally an international phenomenon because he wrote a book called The Mystery of Capital, Why It Thrives in the West and Nowhere Else.
Mm-hmm.
And the point of this is, even though I've been an advocate of private property rights my entire life, but as I read his book, he began to outline what I really never considered, what was so important. It is, more than 70% of people in this country are employed by small businesses. Most of those small businesses fund their business through the equity in their own property. They get loans for it. People get loans for other reasons, to better their lives, to expand things they've wanted, to expand maybe the size of their home, so forth. Equity in their property. This is the root of wealth in the United States. And the reason that we're able to do that and create wealth from that isn't just because you own it. It is because there is a very specific system in place that registers and records that you own that property.
Mm-hmm.
If you didn't have that system in place, then banks would not be allowed to, or would have no means to, loan money to you based on that equity. The fact of the matter is, a county recorder's office, and every single county has one, the county recorder's office is the place where this property is registered, and that's where the equity then comes from, begins to grow. The county recorder's office is the most powerful office in the world. What the point of it is, that system that we have in this country does not exist in most of the rest of the world. For example, in Mexico, where you have all this poverty, and this is the reason why you have so many people coming here. They'll do anything they can to get into this country because of the poverty in Mexico. Why? Well, first of all, they have absolutely no means to build wealth, to pull themselves out of their poverty. They're just stuck in it. In Mexico, if you try, you can buy property in Mexico, but it takes you over 20 years to get it registered in your name so that you can use it for equity.
You mean just basically, a regular Mexican citizen? It's almost like applying to own something, and that's a quarter of a lifetime spent at trying to deal with the government. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, basically they're paying rent to the government for the right to own property they're paying for, and there are all these palms that are crossed, all these bureaucrats, all these little underhanded things that go on, bribes and so forth, to get from this step to that step. And you say, well, you have to sign this form. And so you sign the form. And you go to the next guy, and he says, well, you didn't sign that right. You need to sign it this way. Mm-hmm. Or here's another form. On and on and on. And this system, unfortunately, exists in most of the world. And you have people living in underground economies. They may be living in homes. They may be living on some kind of property, but they do not own it. There's no registration of a way to tell that they own it, and so they cannot use it to build wealth. And this is so important. It is the key to why the United States is the way it is and why there's such abject poverty in the rest of the world. In Peru, Hernando de Soto found it took him just to start a business. It took him 289 days to legally register a new business. He had to end up paying fees of over $1,200 in registration fees to start this new business. And if you live in Peru, to have $1,200 in your pocket probably is well more than a year's worth of income.
Mm-hmm.
So the average person to start a business of their own is just unheard of. And they have no way to get an equity loan on their property in order to pay those kinds of fees and do the other things you need to do to start a business. Therefore, they live in abject poverty, and they are wards of the state, essentially.
The banks, rightfully so, I suppose, can't just give you the money without any kind of collateral, because the banks are owned by people, and they're held responsible to some degree or another. For that, and it's just a terrible trap that the people get caught in. As we come back from the break here in just a minute, Tom, I want to talk a little bit about a question that struck my mind as you were talking about what's going on in Mexico, because we have a Trans-Texas corridor being planned now by those who think they're in charge thus far, and this has got to do with an implementation of a free, open border kind of thing. But, Tom, how can a country like Mexico and a country like United States, who have two completely different moral outlooks and realistic outlooks on how to do business, how can we ever get together and make something like this work? It doesn't seem to me that that's possible. And we'll be talking about that when we come back from this next break here. Before we do that, let me talk a little bit about what needs to go on here at Radio Liberty. The cost of underwriting, the cost of these programs is going up, ladies and gentlemen. And if you enjoy this kind of programming, if you enjoy the guests we've had, that Dr. Stan has had for so many years now, it's time for you to step up to the plate and see what part you're going to play in the future of Radio Liberty. I'd like for you to call right now, 800-544-8927, and tell the person that answers the phone there that you'd like to find out all about Radio Liberty. Have them send you a complete information packet, maybe a catalog of the goods and services that are provided by Radio Liberty, and we'll certainly be happy to get that out to you. You know, the most important thing, though, that you can do is to covenant with God to support this ministry, because our country is not going to be here forever, ladies and gentlemen. As much as we'd like it to be here forever, just going on the way it has been, the way our forefathers planned it, those who fell in the great wars gave their lives for the founding fathers under divine guidance, put a constitution together, which we find being eroded by executive orders and all kinds of other things going on. We bring those things to light here at Radio Liberty, as well as Tom does with his DeWeese Report in the American Policy Center. But, you know, you need to have a part in all this, too. So I'm going to encourage you to call 800-544-8927 and see what you're going to do about it. Tom, as we were talking just a minute ago, I alluded to the fact that maybe there could be a free copy in the mail for some people if they were to write to you or call. Could you give us the information about that, or am I putting you out on a ledge here?
No, not at all. Certainly, you know, we put out the DeWeese Report every month, and we cover the issues of privacy rights, property rights, national sovereignty, illegal immigration, education, the UN, and, you know, we talk about all these kind of things. And you can get a copy of it, but you can go to our website, first of all. It's www.americanpolicy.org. It's americanpolicy.org. And a lot of our articles are posted there. We've got a long archive on there of articles from over 10 years. You can also, while you're on the site, you can sign up for our action alert system, which is called Sledgehammer.
Right. Good thing,
and
too.
I call it Sledgehammer because I figured out that members of or elected officials understood one of two things: the money in their pocket or a sledgehammer between the eyes, and I decided I wasn't giving them any money, so we gave them a sledgehammer. But it's done by email, and it comes out whenever something hot is happening on Capitol Hill, and it'll tell you everything that you need to know, action to take on legislation and so forth, and who to call and all that.
Let me interrupt you and say, ladies and gentlemen, I've been a subscriber to Sledgehammer for quite some time now, and I couldn't agree more that the idea of having it in an email that comes up to you in the morning whenever you check your emails, it's fresh. You don't have to remember to go check whether something's happening by going to American Policy Center or whatever. It comes to you, and it gives you complete instructions as to what you need to go. Okay, Tom, sorry.
And it's free.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good thing.
Yeah. Or you can, you know, give us a call at the American Policy Center. We're in Warrenton, Virginia. Our phone number is 540-341-8911. That's 540-341-8911. Ask for a free copy of the DeWeese Report. We'll just send it right out to you. Or a lot of things we're talking about today, we can send you some background information on that as well.
The Internet is a great thing, and I love the way that you can search for things on it to find out information that piques your interest. Ladies and gentlemen, you know, you may feel overwhelmed by all of the different kinds of things that are going on in this world today to usurp our sovereignty, to take away your money, to take away even your religious rights that you have under the Constitution. Those kinds of things may be overwhelming, but there is some small part that you can do. And Tom and the American Policy Center have put together a lot of good stuff at AmericanPolicy.org. And you could go there and find a subject that particularly piques your interest. And that's what I like about the whole thing. By piquing your interest in something you're fascinated about, it's kind of like going back to college or selecting a class that you really remember liking in high school, you know, and say, I can really get interested in that. It may not be a big thing. It may not be anything that some other people would be as interested as you are, but you can become an expert in it. You can talk to your friends about it. You can give chapter and verse, so to speak, about issues that are beginning to raise their heads here in these United States of America. And one of the best tools that I know of can be found at American Policy Center, or American Policy, rather, .org, AmericanPolicy.org, and their phone number is 540-341-8911. And let's have some other people join us now back on the program. We'd like to welcome everybody back on board for a couple of minutes here. We're talking with Tom DeWeese from the American Policy Center. We just gave that phone number. I'll do it again, 540-341-8911 for a free copy of the DeWeese Report. And ladies and gentlemen, I asked Tom just before we went to break a very important question, and hopefully he's had time now, although I've made him talk a little bit during the break. What's going on? How can the United States possibly deal with a corrupt company or country like Mexico, Tom?
Well, you make an excellent point. In the Security and Prosperity Partnership, which President Bush, Vicente Fox, and Paul Martin, back in 2005, the heads of Canada, Mexico, and the United States, agreed to, what the term they used was harmonize, that we would harmonize our three nations in economic situations, business, and a whole slew of other things. They've got 20 different working groups working on just an endless number of issues that affect all three nations and how they would be harmonized together. Well, when you've got, you know, first of all, Mexico is a socialist country. We just described why that country is so poverty-stricken, because because of its own policies of the government controlling everything. The ability to own and control your own private property is almost zero. You've got Canada, which is a wonderful country, but it is part of the British Crown, and it is not a representative democracy or a republic like the United States. The United States is unique, as I said at the very beginning, of any other nation on Earth.
Right.
You can't harmonize all that together without the United States losing its uniqueness and losing its liberties. You're not going to get Mexico and Canada to accept our ideas. You're going to see the United States accepting their ideas. And that's exactly what NAFTA and GATT and the SPP are all about. And you mentioned this corridor, this Trans-Texas Corridor. One of the great fallacies that is taking place today, the libertarians and a lot of conservatives have bought into this idea, and they are just dead wrong. As I do my research and I'm finding it, they are supporting a policy called public-private partnerships. That is what the SPP is built on. That's what the Trans-Texas Corridor is built on. That's what NAFTA is built on. The idea that corporations in partnership with government, somehow this creates better government, smaller government, cheaper government, by letting the corporations do the funding and build highways and so forth. The fact of the matter is, it's not all companies doing this. It's not done by any kind of a bidding process, competitive bidding. There's no competition there at all. You've got certain corporations that have become an elite who have cozied up to government, and they're working together, and what you end up with are government-sanctioned monopolies. And that is exactly what the Trans-Texas Corridor is.
Are we seeing some of that in things like Blackwater and Halliburton and so forth in our defense side of things?
Most assuredly. Absolutely. These, competition, you can have government programs that have private companies doing them,
mm-hmm.
private companies that would go into schools and provide, food services, for example. But it's a competitive bidding process. There is some sort of a recourse if it isn't good. And they can lose their contract and so forth. In these situations, the Trans-Texas Corridor, first of all, it's a foreign country called a company called Cintra. They're from Spain, and they have a 50-year lease to build the Trans-Texas Corridor and to control it. Cintra will not only build it, but they will charge the fees and put them in their pocket. One of the things that that lease contains, the agreement with the Texas Department of Transportation, is a no-compete clause. That means that nobody else can build a highway to compete with it. That means that Cintra can control the traffic, and it can charge whatever it wants to for the toll, and you have no recourse. Now, last year, the Ohio Turnpike raised its fees to a point that truckers said, we're not driving on the turnpike anymore,
mm-hmm.
and they started driving on other roads off the turnpike, to where the governor said, man, to the Ohio Department of Transportation, you had better lower those fees and get those trucks back on that highway.
Well, aren't we just giving this Cintra thing kind of a little slice of our sovereignty right up the center of the heart of Texas?
It most certainly is.
I'm not saying that Mexico is sticking its finger in there necessarily, but something that is not under the rules and regulations of the Constitution of these United States is somehow operating something on our dirt, so to speak, and they're going to have complete control over the, I guess, the 7-Elevens, the McDonald's, the fuels, the on and off. And I also understand that if you own a farm or something and this stuff cuts right through you, there's not going to be very many overpasses either.
First of all, it goes back to the eminent domain issue and private property, where they're deciding that it will just go through your property, and that's too bad. Texas has a quick-take policy, which means they give you 90 days to get off your property. Even if you disagree with them, you got to be off within 91 days, and there's no recourse.
Hmm.
Second of all, this highway is 1,200 800 feet wide. It's a quarter of a mile. It is so wide, there is no way across it without overpasses, and they don't have any intention of putting overpasses on it, across it. They are telling the communities, if you want an overpass, you got to build your own at about $2.5 million apiece. If without the overpasses, your police, your fire, your school buses cannot get across the thing, it literally is cutting whole counties in two. It'll cut the state of Texas in two.
And I can't believe, though, that, first of all, there's something to states' rights, isn't there anymore? Has the government of Texas gone along with all this, and what's going on there? We're going to talk about that a little bit more. We're right in the middle of a break with some of our Genesis people now, and they'll be back with us here in just a second. So I'd like to talk to those of you who may or may not be listening or recording or TiVoing this thing on the World Wide Web. You know, wherever you are in this world, you can support Radio Liberty as well. If you don't feel like calling, even though we'll drop the 50 cents, I guess it is now, at 800-544-8927, you can go to radioliberty.com and find out some information. Or you can also write us simply at Radio Liberty Post Office Box 969, Soquel, California. That's spelled S-O-Q-U-E-L, Soquel, California, 95073. No matter what you do to get in contact with the folks here at Radio Liberty, it's going to be a good thing for you, because we're going to back up what we say here and get you information free and postpaid just as soon as we can, because we're interested in enrolling as many people as we possibly can get to help get the word out, just like we're doing today with Tom, just like we'll be doing tomorrow as we're talking about white supremacy and some of the scary things that are going on here in this country. It's up to you, ladies and gentlemen. We're doing our part. Tom's doing his part. The people who support Radio Liberty, they're doing their part. And we'd certainly like to see you join us as well. So wherever you might be, all the way around the world, listening to us on the World Wide Web or whatever, give us a call at 800-544-8927, www.radioliberty.com, P.O. Box 969, Soquel, California. 95073. And we're all back together again here for another few minutes as we talk with Tom DeWeese. Let me give that website out one more time, Tom. It's the AmericanPolicy.org. AmericanPolicy.org. And ladies and gentlemen, if you're intrigued by what we're doing here today, give him a call at 540-341-8911 and ask for a copy of the DeWeese Report. This is something that's written by Tom and other people, too. It gives you good ideas about what's going on in this country, what's going on in other countries, for that matter. And I think most importantly, Tom, you always give some good insight as to what people can do, and I thank you for that. So let's get back to this idea of a Trans-Texas Corridor briefly, because we have been talking about the fact that the personal property rights are what have made this country strong, and the reason that we have personal property rights is the fact that we have a Constitution and a Declaration of Independence, which the courts are supposed to uphold. Is that basically correct, giving us title or deed to things we own?
That's correct. It is, you know, that's what the Supreme Court is supposed to do. A lot of people say that the Supreme Court's job is to interpret the Constitution. That's absolutely incorrect. Supreme Court's job is to enforce the Constitution.
Right.
And they are simply not doing that. The Supreme Court made this decision, this Kelo decision on eminent domain a couple of years ago, where literally they said, instead of the way that the Constitution was written and the way it has always been in the United States, that your property is your property. What it says now is, if it is deemed by your local government, it is for the common good that your property can be used in a different way, get higher taxes or higher revenues out of it for the whole community, then that's okay for government to take that by eminent domain. So if you have a 7-Eleven sitting there, or you have your home sitting there on a piece of property, and a developer and a councilman decide in cahoots together in a public-private partnership, by the way, that they can build a high-rise condo with expensive homes in it and collect more taxes than your little home sitting there, then that's okay. And so what they decided with the Kelo decision was that there is no private property in the United States. You are allowed to live on it until somebody deems that it's more important to them to do something else with it. And here we have the Trans-Texas Corridor going up right up the center of Texas, a quarter of a mile wide, literally splitting the state in two, and it's going right through some of the richest farm and ranch land in Texas and doing this. And it's a private company doing it. And one of the things, I mentioned the no-compete clause that the Department of Transportation in Texas agreed to. The other thing they agreed to is a thing called a comprehensive development agreement. They put this in the agreement with Cintra. What this means is it gives them a guarantee of return on that highway. That means that Cintra can do whatever it wants to do in order to achieve the guarantees that the Texas government has given them. And what that means is that they can, you know, that you can't compete with it. There can't be another highway that's competing with it, so you have no choice. So you are captive by this monopoly, and they can set the rates. There was a meeting of government and private companies in New York just a month ago to talk about these very things, and a gentleman there gave some testimony at that meeting. He was trying to tell them that they better be careful what they do. He said, if the Holland Tunnel in New York City becomes owned by one of these public-private partnerships, that there will be no competition getting out of New York. They can charge a rate of as much as he predicted, a fee to get through the Holland Tunnel of about $186 a pass.
I'm pretty naive. How does somebody buy the Holland Tunnel? I don't understand that.
Well, Cintra has bought the right to the Indiana Toll Road, the Ohio Turnpike. They are now negotiating with the Pennsylvania Turnpike. They take over running this. The states have decided that this is a way for them to get out of financial obligations by letting private industry do this and take over infrastructure like this.
So what we see is we have politicians who are being paid pretty well, to all the ones I know of anyway, are finding out ways to where they don't have to be held accountable, they don't have to do anything for their salary, more or less, and the taxpayer, the taxes that we pay, will move more into their salary range and less into supporting the infrastructure by just farming out these things to different corporations. Is that basically correct?
Yeah, and what a great partnership. You've got the elected officials can hide behind the independence of the company so they don't have to answer to the taxpayer.
Sure, I didn't do that, right?
Yeah, and they can say, look, all the money we're saving you. Well, the fact of the matter is the tolls that have been charged on the Pennsylvania Turnpike and the Ohio Turnpike and the Indiana Toll Road were supposed to go into maintaining that infrastructure and paying for it. But instead, they took that money and they started throwing it into welfare programs and, of course, education and every other little game they like to play with that money. And now they say, we don't have enough money to increase the infrastructure and improve it, so therefore, we need these private companies to come in and do it. But again, there's not a competition here. These are a select elite, and it's a public, a government-sanctioned monopoly is what they've created.
That's the key thing right there, no competition. You brought us right back, you clever guy, to what we were talking about earlier, and that is private property and the right of government to extract wealth from us and spread it around. We were talking about redistribution of wealth, and that's what's going on here, because as we are more and more encumbered with taxes and rules and regulations and policy codes and certificates of performance and permits and all this other kind of stuff, each time we pay something more, it's taking more money out of us. We used to think property tax as well, they're going to pay for the schools, they're going to pay for the fire department, they're going to do this. Well, that's just a tiny little bit on top of all that's being extracted from the normal property owner. And redistribution of wealth is taking place right here in this county and probably in every other county in these United States because of the fact that we do have private property here. Tom, tell us a little bit more about that debate at Cambridge. I think I interrupted you back at the beginning of the program when that fellow came up to you. You know, Aristotle said, and this is the point I want to go to, Aristotle said, all who have meditated on the art of governing mankind have been convinced that the fate of empires depends upon the education of youth. That's really insightful, I think. And boy, have we seen that since 1960.
Well, this was the big shock I had when I was there. First of all, my experience at Cambridge was incredible. And, you know, Cambridge is one of the top universities in the world and recognized as such. And I've got to tell you, the students there, I have never seen students so involved in their academic world, so caring about learning and so forth. There was just an incredible academic atmosphere there. And as I spoke at this debate, this was in a 200-year-old debating society, the Cambridge Union, and what I had to say was that redistribution of the wealth is theft. And there were absolute gasps in the audience, people gasping. They couldn't believe I was saying this. When it was over, I was the only speaker out of six who stayed, and I literally held court for about 2 hours with these students. They came up to me, and they said, "You really don't believe in redistribution of the wealth?" And I said, "No, it's theft."
And so they knew the term.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And, well, in fact, one of the member of parliament, Simon Hughes, who was on the other side, got right in my face and said, "I believe in redistribution of the wealth."
Hmm.
And, you know, I wanted to say, "Whose? Yours or theirs?"
Right, exactly.
They said to me, "You don't believe in it." They said, "Well, but if somebody has more than they need, shouldn't they share it with somebody else?" And I said, "Why should they have to?" And they literally stood back, like, "What?" And I said, and I started talking about the fact that there are $9.2 trillion worth of dead property in this world, property that nobody can use to help build wealth. And I said, if that $9.2 trillion could be added to the world economy, do you not agree that that would help the world economy and help bring people up and so that they could create wealth of their own? So, oh, yeah, you know, and as I talked about these things and all the things we're talking about here about how wealth is created and that people create their own wealth, they looked at me and they said, "What an interesting point of view. How can I learn more?" This is Cambridge University. I wanted to scream, "Economics 101?
Really?
But the fact of the matter is we have all of these programs today to try to eradicate wealth. One of the people I was debating was the head of an organization at the UN called the Millennium Project. Their job is to eradicate poverty by 2015. I looked over at him and I said, "You realize you don't have a prayer, don't you? Because all you want to do is rob from this guy and give to that guy."
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to work unless you can find a way to help these people create their own wealth. What we have done with all of these welfare programs, the Feed the Children of the world, the pouring all this money into them, where they're important because people are hungry, but not one of them is working at a solution to get them out of poverty, just to maintain them. And what I call it is lifelong breadlines. That's what they have assigned them to.
We can see that pretty much in the projects of New York, right?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, I don't remember when they started, but it's been some time, and every now and again you'll see something on television, you know, Law and Order or something like that, where they go down to the projects. And here are these nominally beautiful buildings that have been built with the idea of supporting people who, for some reason, have fallen off the whatever and they can't make a living for their own or something like that. But it really does just continue to make them more and more dependent and expect an entitlement. And the projects, I think more on the East Coast perhaps than here. I'm not really sure. Correct me if I'm wrong. They're really just ghettos now in many respects because there's no private property. And people simply don't have the same kind of respect for others' property than they would have for their own.
Here's a prime example of that. South Africa. 10 years ago, a neighborhood there was nothing but tin roof shanties. And the South African government tried an experiment, and they opened it up for these people to own that property. Today, when you walk down that neighborhood, There are houses so neat and clean, you can eat off the sidewalk. Mm. People are proud of what they have. The one thing that's missing there is they haven't figured out this equity thing yet. But they do understand ownership. And this is one of the things that Hernando de Soto has driven home. The answer, what he gets from most of these world leaders is that, well, the people in my country aren't ready for private property ownership. They don't understand it. He told us when we had a private meeting with him back in June of a situation where he was going to go in and meet with a head of state, and he knew that this head of state was going to give him that argument. He wanted to debate him. And so Hernando sent a team of people into a four-block area around the presidential palace there and asked people, knocking on doors, what proof do you have that you own your property? Now, they didn't have the system I'm talking about. They didn't have an official system of property, but they understood ownership. And they provided them with some certain kinds of documents and so forth. Might even be something that the neighbor next door says, you own that property.
Uh-huh.
He took all this information, laid it on the table in front of that head of state and said, now don't tell me your people don't understand private property ownership and don't know how to do it. This they do. You just aren't letting them. Now let's start from there.
You're not letting them is the key to when you're dealing with a bureaucracy, because they want to continue to make more bureaucracy. If you've ever given anybody a promotion to or established a new thing, he says, well, I need to have a secretary, and that secretary needs to have an assistant. Well, there's three new jobs right there, and when that assistant comes in, the first thing they decide to do is, how can I become a secretary and maybe have my own assistant in my own office? And it just keeps going from there on bigger and bigger and bigger. I've seen that in the military. I've seen it, unfortunately, in churches. I've seen it in the private sector. We're talking to Tom DeWeese, ladies and gentlemen. That book that he was talking about is written by Hernando de Soto. I could date myself and tell you that's the same way that they spelled the name of the car. But most people.
I used to own one of those.
Oh, good. I'm glad anybody else heard about it. But Hernando de Soto, in The Mystery of Capital, Why Capitalism Triumphs in the West and Fails Everywhere Else. I bought one this afternoon on Amazon for $11, and they have them as cheap as $6. And I would recommend that those of you who find something interesting in our conversation today, go ahead and go. I'll plug Amazon. Get a copy of Hernando de Soto's book, The Mystery of Capital. You know, Justice Janice Brown said in her dissenting opinion about a hotel versus the city and county of San Francisco, she said, and I shouldn't laugh, but it's so truthful, quote, once again, a majority of this court has proved that if enough people get together and act in concert, they can take something and not pay for it. But theft is still theft. Theft is theft even when the government approves of the thievery. Turning a democracy into a kleptocracy does not enhance the stature of the thieves. It only diminishes the legitimacy of the government. And that's what I'm concerned about. At the highest levels in this country, Tom, people are doing end runs around our Constitution and eroding the things which we have depended on. And I find people today who said, oh, don't worry about it, that the United States will always be here. That's not necessarily true, is it?
Well, the framework may still be here, but how it operates is not. Janice Brown is a great American, and what she had to say, we say it in a little bit of a shorthand. We keep hearing today more and more this is a democracy. Democracy is a lynch mob.
Right.
It is a majority rules means that whoever has the most thugs wins. Another way to say it is a democracy is three wolves and a sheep voting on what to have for lunch. The difference between a democracy and a republic is that you're in a republic, your rights are guaranteed. It is just plain there, and it doesn't matter what the majority wants. And we are getting more and more and more towards this majority rule and this groupthink and as you say, organized government kleptocracy.
Yeah, I couldn't say it either. But you know, that's true. People on television, they never say in their newscasts or even in their so-called comments on the news, they never call these United States a republic, because I don't think they understand what a republic is, frankly. Democracy is just something that kind of blurts out. That started, what, with FDR?
I think so. Yeah.
So that's scary to me when you go up to someone and say, well, we don't live in a democracy, we live in a republic. And they say, oh, that's not important. It doesn't make any difference where we live. The Americas or United States is always going to be the United States. But the important thing, ladies and gentlemen, for you to understand, and I'm sure that Tom will back me up here, is that in a republic you have laws and you're operating under that set of laws. And the wonderful thing about it is the founding fathers were set down laws to allow us to change the laws. But we have to go within the cycle of things that are working there. We're going to go to break for just a minute. Some of you are going away. Some of you are going to stay here. We're going to have fun. Tom and I will be back in just a minute. And Tom, so as we continue, if we allow this continued encroachment on the things that are happening to our Constitution, we're going to see more and more things like the International Court and NAFTA and SPP being the regulating body, won't we?
Yeah, that's the thing. At this point, NAFTA and eventually the SPP has its own court system. And if, for example, a company finds that a state law, that, you know, say like North Carolina or somewhere like that or Texas or whatever, they pass a law that they see interferes with their NAFTA-sanctioned business,
mm-hmm.
They can take the grievance to a NAFTA court. That NAFTA court trumps the U.S. court or the state court all the way to the Supreme Court. It's what rules it. And so,
let me interrupt you there just a second. When you say that to me, that says to me, well, that's screwy. What are we going to let those people from Eastern Europe or whoever the court was, or NAFTA from, you know, Costa Rica or something, are they going to come in here and arrest? Are we going to give them our money? I mean, we still have some sovereignty, don't we? How can they get sovereignty over us?
Well, you know, if you're watching what's going on with the WTO and the World Bank and so forth, they're making regulations that are saying, you know, the United States will file a grievance on something and they'll come back and say, nope, we're going to rule with the other guy. The United States is going to pay a fine. The United States is going to quit doing what it's doing, and we do it.
Oh, dear.
This is the question of sovereignty. The question of sovereignty is who's in charge. You know, there's not one single one of these UN treaties or agreements that we have that say we're going to usurp the sovereignty of the United States. But what's insidious about all of this, the UN's Agenda 21 and the Biodiversity Treaty and NAFTA and GATT and SPP, that none of them say this, but in the end, they are what makes the decision. And the United States is voluntarily giving up its sovereignty because the question is who's in charge ultimately. They leave the process in place. We will still have the Congress and the President and your county commissioners and the borders and so forth there, but it will no longer matter because it will be usurped by this other force.
As we talk about that term, who's in charge here, can we say that, for example, President Bush is not really in charge? I know we're getting into the conspiratorial nature of things, and we're going to welcome our people back here in just a few seconds, and I think maybe that's a good way to end the program today. What's the motivation of the president? What's the motivation of people who are nominally in charge? And I'm going to ask Tom DeWeese for the last question of the afternoon. What is the motivation of the president to erode the Constitution? Tom?
Well,
that's a hard question, huh?
If I haven't sat in the Oval Office and asked him this, but I think there's a lot of things. There's a lot of forces in play. There are those who honestly believe that working with these global corporations is somehow the conservative way, the free enterprise way, and they're not looking at it. As I said at the very beginning, a lot of these libertarian foundations and so forth are just dead wrong. They're mistaken by this. There is a force for that. You know, you want to talk about if he's naive and doesn't understand.
Well, I would hate to think
evil.
That's true.
No.
I mean, seriously, you know, everybody says, oh, he's not very smart. You know, well, in certain things, we're all not very smart, but to be in the position that he is, you know, he's got to understand. And of course, I believe in some pressures, monetary, typically, or even spiritual and to some degree that are driving these things. The Bible says, of course, that we're in a spiritual battle, and I believe the spiritual battle that the Bible talks about is beginning to be seen, so to speak. They're blatant now. Rockefeller says, if we can work towards a one-world government anytime, I'll agree to having said that, and I'm proud of it. I thought that was an amazing thing for him to say.
Yeah, exactly. And these guys are admitting this. Vicente Fox admitted that they were putting together a North American Union. I think ultimately the answer has to be that George Bush and those around him are globalists who see the United States just as an entity in all this, and somehow we get peace and love and kumbaya by embracing the world instead of just the United States. I think they honestly believe it supposedly ends wars, makes prosperity. They're just wrong.
They see themselves as being always in command, though, and they don't really care what happens to the poor guy?
Exactly.
So it's my money that's going to be paying the taxes. The labor, I don't have that many, more monies to give. I'm approaching the end of my life, I suppose. It's a logical thing. I've lived more than I'm going to live, if you know what I'm saying. But my kids are the ones who are going to be working more and more and more for the government, and they're going to have to wake up. And if they've been educated in the fashion that they have, I'm having a tough time waking them up. But, Tom, we're at the end here. We're talking with Tom DeWeese. He's the publisher through the auspices of the American Policy Center of the DeWeese Report, a free copy of which you can get at 540-341-8911, or you can simply go to AmericanPolicy.org and access all kinds of good stuff there. Tom, I want to thank you very much for spending an hour with the people of the Central California coast and Lord knows where else via the internet, the satellite, and all the other stuff we do, and I hope to talk to you again real soon. Thank you, brother.
My pleasure, Dave. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So, there we go. Well, we've got a minute or so to have a heart-to-heart here with just you and me and the wall. Those numbers I gave you before about Radio Liberty are very important. You need to write them down, 800-544-8927, www.radioliberty.com, if you're at all interested in what's going on here. And I really hope that you are. I'd like to ask you for continued prayers for protection and provision for everybody who works up here at Radio Liberty, particularly the people who work day in and day out. I'm privileged to only have to work a couple hours a day when I put on a program like this, but there are those here who work hard, long time. Dr. Stan is certainly in need of your prayers right now, and so we pray for him. We pray that you'll decide what part of this battle you want to take, because it's so important. My name is Dave Wilson, and as the Lord tarries, we're going to be talking about white supremacy tomorrow on a special edition of Radio Liberty. Until then, pray for us and listen to this.